Good morning, and good morning to the leadership of IDSWIFT, PMC. So you're looking at me, waiting for me to recognize you. And to the staff, can we then start with our meeting? My name is Mandla. My name is Mandla Hai, the chairperson of the Select Committee on Economic and Business Development. I will then allow members to introduce themselves and the staff, parliament, as well as the IDC. Start with you, Honorable Chimunya.
Morning, my name is George Mtimunye. I'm a member of the committee. I come from Mpumalanga.
I'm James Mtetra, a permanent delegate from KZN.
Bringmotlo Ntebe, a member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Willem Faber and I represent the Northern Cape in the NCOB.
Morning, I'm Mr. Rapsos from Committee Section.
Morning everybody, Ismail Hussain, BNG.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Thabang Molusi, I'm from the office of Honorable Dikgale.
Good morning, my name is Brian Zond, I'm from Economic Development Department.
Good morning everybody, my name is Salam Kobuze, I'm from the IDC Capital Office.
Good morning everyone, my name is Kanyezi Ngwabese from IDC.
Good morning, my name is Museke Simpeta from IDC.
Good morning Chair and Honourable Members, my name is Mpuleni Chefekwena, I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the IDC.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Rochelle Varis, and I'm from the IDC.
Good morning.
Thank you very much. We would have anticipated if the vulgar leadership of the institution, the minister and board members were also present. So would like CEO if you could convey that message. In future, would like either the minister or deputy minister or even board members in particular. Thank you. The apology that we have is that of Honorable Dikgale. She's unable to attend this meeting. She will be arriving late for the meeting. Let me take this opportunity to welcome IDC. We, as you know, that we're supposed to have met with you. We had to swap the dates that were for you, and we gave them to the Department of Economic Development because at the time we were informed that the CEO was not going to be available. We thank you that you have agreed to the arrangement, and we also appreciate that you are today present in the meeting. Without wasting any time, we'll allow you then to take us through the report, and members will then ask questions, and we take it from there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair, and let me first express my appreciation that you were able to accommodate us, as you correctly pointed out. We had already arranged a roadshow in the provinces, and we didn't want to disappoint
other people who already were anticipating that we will engage with them on the financing side. So, and I appreciate the committee for really accommodating. And on behalf of the chair, let me also pass, I'll pass the message, but she did indicate that I should pass her apologies in that regard, but in future she will ensure that she does indeed come and prioritize. Chair, before I start, I want to get an indication of the time we have for the presentation, and I know there's questions so that we can try and manage that appropriately.
Said if you can do it in 15 minutes so that we can also have time for members to ask questions, because I know that you'll also spend longer time than in responding to the questions. Yeah. So let's save more time for questions and responses. So if you can be quicker on the presentation, because what we also appreciate is that you will receive the presentation on time. That made it easier for us to go through the report on our own, all and we have prepared the questions in that regard. So therefore it will be quicker to make the presentation, but we may take longer time in the questions and answer session.
Thank you very much, Chair, for that. We'll try. 15 minutes is tight, but we'll try, Chair. The presentation will take a form of, I'll do a little bit of the introduction. Rochelle here, who's the head of the financial management, will do the numbers quickly, and then I'll look at the operational results and what we've done. Also, you'd have noticed, Chair, we have included some case studies. We thought it would be useful for the committee, instead of just giving you numbers, just also give you the real case studies behind some of these numbers. So in those ones, I think that's where we'll save time, because we don't necessarily have to go through each and every one, just to showcase that these numbers indeed are real. These are the people behind them. These are companies behind them. So without further ado, also, Chair, let me also indicate some of the numbers you'll see. There might be two or three numbers that would have changed, because when we prepared, some of the stats numbers were not there, growth estimates, number of levels of unemployment, and all of those would have changed. And then I will update in one slide on the rating agencies, because we've been having some discussions with them. Chair and committee members, we're presenting the IDC's activities for the year ending March this year, where we operated in an environment globally, also continentally, but also in the country, where it's been very difficult. It's been difficult in the sense that growth has been very subdued. It's been difficult in that the levels of unemployment have increased as well. And that has an impact, particularly on the growth, on the partners that we engage with, because our activities are in terms of partnerships, where some of them would not have been able to expand to the level as we thought they would, and some of them would have seen that their performance has been affected, because a number of them do export, particularly on manufactured goods, into the rest of into Europe predominantly, and some of them, when they export their commodities into East Asia, they would also have been affected because the growth has not been there. And that has really been evident in the numbers that we will show in terms of activity. But having said that, we're still committed and we want to ensure that we increase our level of activity. So that introduction really takes the, just summarizing slide 1, 2, and 3 for me, Chair. We've given some numbers in terms of the growth numbers, growth estimates, and all of those. But as I said, the Reserve Bank has done a refocus. In fact, and the growth estimates are more subdued than we thought. So that means all of us, as partners, we need to really step up so that we can play our role. So having said that, Rochelle will take us through quickly the numbers, and then I'll come back and talk about the operational involvement performance. Rochelle.
Thank you, CEO. Chair, not to repeat anything that the CEO has said, but the year 2016 was a very difficult year. The economy was, our shares were still very subdued, our investments. So the numbers that we see here, they are better than what we expected, but they are still very subdued, and our numbers are under pressure. So the IDC group, there hasn't been much changes to the group. We still have our material subsidiaries, like Foscore, Score, and CIFA, and those numbers, the losses that those companies are making is contributing to the bottom line of the group numbers that we'll see on the next slide. The mini group, which comes through on a lot of the slides, that's our financing activities, really the IDC companies that act like a bank, that have that give out loans and invest in shares. This slide summarizes the crux of So this slide really is what the IDC has been doing over the past 5 years. We saw our assets dropping from 122 billion to 121 billion. We still have a very strong cash position of about 7 billion rand. We have our liabilities have grown. We do have our bilaterals with the banks. We also have the UIF and the PIC that we borrow from in order to achieve certain objectives. The number where we see our operating profit actually being in a loss-making position, that is really as a result of Foscore and Score making losses of over 1.5 billion rand. The IDC company in itself made a profit of 1 billion rand, and that's why we'll see the bottom line really dropping from 1.6 to only 223 million for the financial year. Our listed investments that forms about half of our book. Half of our investments are listed. We see Sasol. If the right blue, that's Sasol. So Sasol, just in the past 3 years, have dropped from 31 billion down to 24 billion. The other one that's really significant, we've seen Kumba going from 20 billion to just around 6 billion at the end of March. So our listed shares at this total bar was over 60 billion in 2014. And it is now at around 40 billion. We have a diversification strategy in place. This listed portfolio is very concentrated in the resources sector, and that sector on the JSE in the country under pressure. So we have a strategy inside the IDC that we want to implement, where we diversify out of resources and have a more balanced portfolio that will see more stable growth and not be affected as much by the economy all moving in the same direction. The group revenue has stayed from 2015 to 2016. We haven't seen much growth also as a result of the economy. The big numbers that we see, the mining, manufacturing and other income, that is really Foscore and Score's income from the activities. The dividend income and interest, that's the IDC, our source of revenue inside the company. Then we have our operational costs. Staff cost for the IDC is really the bulk of our costs. It's over 60% of our expenses, except for impairments. And it's been well controlled. And from 2015 to 2016, we've seen a drop in our operating expenses, and that is really the company trying to do more with less. The impairment, which is really a number that we monitor very closely, that's our investments that go bad. The numbers that the companies that we invest in where we potentially could not get our money back. And we have a tolerance level of 20% that we set for ourselves internally. We've seen that number stabilize now at around 17%. It is close to the 20, but we have quite a number of initiatives inside the IDC to control the impairment levels. The IDC balance sheet, we've seen our assets, as I said on the balance sheet earlier, we've seen our assets stabilized at around 122 billion rand of total assets. Our debt equity ratio, the IDC still has a very strong balance sheet. We only have 33% debt compared to our entire book. We set ourselves a limit of 60. So that is when the rating agencies and our funders start getting uncomfortable, is if that number goes over 60%. So we monitor that internally through what we borrow, where we borrow, and when we borrow. So that brings us to the end of the numbers that you would see in the IDC 2016 integrated report. The CEO will just talk quickly about the ratings and the discussions we've been having with the agencies.
Thanks, Rochelle. We are rated by two rating agencies, Fitch and Moody's. Fitch has confirmed us on terms of the rating, so that has not changed as what has been presented here, so the rating outlook is still stable. For the national scale, so we have two ratings, for the national and for the international, because we do go out and we borrow. So Moody's is rating us on the international rating scale. As we know, on Friday last week, they have confirmed their rating outlook for South Africa, the sovereign, as a negative outlook. But also they do, in their calculations, so they also do a standalone rating for the IDC, although, I mean, the uplift really is on the international. So we've been having a conversation with them. They did issue out a notice in September to say they anticipate they're looking at the downgrade. So they've done the exercise. They are going to be meeting, so we will hear from them. So we have not heard from them. They needed to do the international, or let's say the sovereign first. One of the key worries was the press that release that was issued by Future Growth, of which we have engaged with Future Growth, and they've lifted that moratorium that they've put in terms of being able to participate in our bond issuance. So we've engaged with them, issued a press statement. So as far as we're concerned, that the relationship with Future Growth is back on track, so there shouldn't be. But that was the main reason why they were worried about that. So, but we'll hear from them in terms of the standalone, what they're saying as far as IDC is concerned. But we're happy that the national rating has been kept at investment grade, because that helps us in the uplift, so we can't pierce that. Now, coming to briefly on the operational, because IDC has got the financing activities, but really how we measure our performance is how many companies we've supported, how many people we've supported, entrepreneurs, and in that process, how many jobs would have been created. So the fourth slide, really, just to give a context, the beginning of last year, April last year, the beginning of our financial year, we changed our strategy and we approached the value chain approach. Really what we were saying is that we wanted to ensure that IDC is seen to be at the center, and hence you'd see that would mean we have to be more proactive as opposed to be reactive. So that will ensure that when we invest, we look at the total value chain. So we look at what informs into that and where we can play, and if there are any market failures, we can be able to participate. So it's been just over 20 months when we've reported on this, and we know this is a long-term approach in its sense. But I think in terms of the progress where we're fairly comfortable that indeed we're on the right track. Maybe the slide I want to talk to is on, maybe spend a minute or so on, is slide 17, where this one really unpacks the approach that we're taking. As I said, on the value chains, we're looking at that, the whole value chain, and also to see whether there's opportunities for regional integration. But also, because we know as an entity, we need to continue to reinvent ourselves, and we need to look at supporting industries which ordinarily might appear small now, but might be industries of the future. And as a result of that strategy, we came up with a new unit, we call it New Industries, where we will be looking at new technologies, supporting them, as we've seen in successful countries, investing in new industries that has helped. And also we've identified some sectors too in specific clothing, textiles, footwear, leather products, and media in motion, where those are very key in the economy, even though they don't quite fit the definition of value chains. But also the impact in terms of job creation they have, but also the indirect jobs that they could create. And then we had another unit which we call high impact sectors, where we're looking at those that are not value chain but are able to create jobs much faster, and they're not prone to be on projects themselves. So that's another unit. And then one where we said in our activities as we invest, sometimes we'd find that what we refer to as industrial infrastructure, we'll find it lacking, and it's key that we invest in it, because that underlays all of those. Sometimes it enables all of those. We're not competing with the likes of the DBSA, but instead we're complementing those. So we will play a role where ordinarily they will not play a role. So the next one slide, let me go to that. So that was just to give a context of where we are in terms of our activities. But in terms of the highlights, which is slide 19, it's how much have we approved? We'll unpack it quickly. How much have we disbursed? The jobs that we expect, these are the direct jobs that we're expecting to create or save. So those are the direct ones. We don't count the indirect, the R multipliers, other people use the 3 multiplier or 5, but we thought if you do that, you start to confuse people. So that's why, hence, we try and highlight those ones from our activities that are direct. But also, because we measure our development in other parts as well, so we look at black-empowered companies included in there will be black industrialists, which we also highlight. But also we look at the other major development measure that we track is the businesses that where women ownership is more than 25%. And we've also started tracking another measure is when businesses where there's youth is over 25%. And one other measure on the development part is on the manufacturing, because we've seen in the past manufacturing has been lagging, so there's been a concerted effort to really increase the level of activity in the manufacturing itself. So that will be on value add. This is also supporting this value chain approach that we've taken. So let's if we just unpack it briefly, in terms of the activity, which is at 14.5, so what we've done is we put it in perspective, and if you look on a five-year trend, we do understand over the last 5 years the approvals have been the highest in these tough circumstances that we find ourselves, and then as far as the disbursements of 11.4 billion, that's been the second the highest in that 5 year period. We had a year in 2013 where we had the highest there. That was because of one large transaction that we had. So in terms of approvals and disbursement, there will always be a lag, because some of these investments have to be implemented over an extended period. So now if you look over the last 5 years, really our level of activity has increased. We're not saying that's enough. We know we need to do more than we should have. Now if we have to unpack where this investment went, what has been giving us some comfort is that it's in the sectors that we want, where there's in the productive sectors of the economy. There's one area which we need to really increase our level of activity on the agro processing, and we think that's an opportunity, that's our focus this year. But we are a bit more encouraged that we're seeing that the bulk of the investment really goes into the productive sectors of the economy, 32% in chemicals and pharmaceuticals, and 45% being in the manufacturing and of metal products and mining. If we were to unpack a little bit on the metals, we'll also see, this slide, which is slide 22, further confirms our investment in the productive sectors, really, which is what we want to see. The next slide, as I did indicate to the chair, we put in some examples just to give the committee members a sense, really, of what we're doing. Bell in Richards Bay, this one for us is a good story. They were in distress. We helped them. Now we funded them. They're expanding into South America. And the next one, M&M Engineering, there we're looking at in the Eastern Cape in Kuha, where there was capacity on the cylinders which was lost, and we're helping together with a black entrepreneur and an international player bringing it back into the economy, which is what we need as a country. Now, if you look on the chemicals sector, this is also giving a sense of where we are investing. The biggest investor there was to modernize and help recapitalize a phosphor, which is a phosphoric acid plant in Richards Bay, together with its mine in Phalaborwa. That's where the bulk of the investment went. But also what we've done also in this sector, in the chemical sector, whilst we invest in the chemicals, but we've also invested in new technology, and this is really in Gauteng, in Pretoria, where it's going to be used when one wants to detect cancer largely. It's a medical imaging the process. It's very technologically advanced, but it will help so that you're able to at least prevent or at least anticipate so that you're where cancer is and then be able to on a targeted intervene. The next value chain which we looked at is on agro-processing and agriculture, which is one area where we said when we look back, we are disappointed our level of activity, and that's why we're focusing on trying to improve that. Also because of the potential it has in creating employment when you backward integrate. So this is one area we're looking at. We had participated in the fighting of drought by providing a facility to the land bank. I will unpack it a little bit more. Some of the examples which we funded in the agro-processing space is this example in Robertson in the Western Cape. I'm sure some of you, when you've gone to some of the supermarkets, would have enjoyed Clement Gold. And in KZN, we're looking at the processing cheese. This one for us is a good one because here we had a foreign partner with the technology, which is rare, which you hardly find, coming and having confidence in South Africa to say we want to set up a processed cheese factory in South Africa. It's one of very few. We do have cheese factories, but this one is processed. That's the one where you'll find in either in when you have your samosas or you have your some of those processed meats. So there's a technique towards that. One area which we've been participating, even if when you look at the last 5 years, has been the energy or area of energy, largely the area of renewable energy. We've been participating and playing a role, and we've seen growth. Now we're a bit more targeted. We're looking at the smalls, but also looking at other technologies. In fact, this picture which you see here, it shows an example of a project where we funded, where from this cow waste, energy is generated, and it helps provide BMW with some of its energy requirements, a third of its energy requirements. We've also funded youth who wants to get involved in energy, so that's an example there. The attraction for us is that they will be operationally involved together with the other partners, which is what we want to see. We don't want to only to see international players. So the other one just gives a sense of another renewable in wind, which we've supported this year. We've also funded other industries, like in the media and motion in this instance, in Gauteng, the studio. Here we're providing black industries who will hold 51%. The next slide, I'm mindful of our 15 minutes here that is running out quickly. And so the next slide gives a sense of some of the other industries which you funded. We've seen in tourism being one of the largest, textiles, we've seen there, we've made inroads. This has been a very difficult sector, but the collaboration between private sector, that is retail in more specific, and the DTI, where they've come into the party in terms of the modernization, the CTCP incentive, that we've seen really bringing back this sector. And also there's a number of other sectors that we've continued to fund. Maybe let's go to the regional spread, Chair, on page slide 37. So this gives you a sense of our regional spread. There's a couple of provinces which we're not very proud of. where we need to up our game, and as a result, we are really stepping up, which is one of the reasons why I was doing the roadshow. I mean, we spent this year, we've gone to all provinces, almost all provinces, really engaging to see how we increase our level of production, our level of activity. One region which really we need to do even more work is Free State. I will have got a slide which I will talk to. That one, I think that's our biggest disappointment if I look into that. There's also a concerted effort from us to that we move investments away from Gauteng, in terms of activity, Gauteng, some parts of KZN and Western Cape, because if you can see proportionately, they've been getting the bigger share. So, but when you look at the last financial year, 50% of our approvals have gone to the other provinces which are less industrialized. So there's been a concerted effort. We're not saying we'll stop investing in the other provinces. I think the relatively speaking, we'll go into the other provinces, because that's where we need more activity to happen. So this slide just gives you, over the last 5 years, our approvals per province. As I said, Free State is an outlier, which we're working hard on it. And then the next one talks to the disbursements. As I said, there's always a lag between approvals and disbursements. Now, we put in one slide because, as I said, Free State is a real outlier. I changed from about 2 months ago, almost 2 months now, appointed a new regional manager because we're not making the intro. So we're hoping that indeed we will improve the level of activity. And so we have a new regional manager who started there. She's been at IDC for long, so she's an experienced deal maker, and I think we will see some visible change there. But also what we do in terms of the activities, we're engaging with the entrepreneurs themselves and the associations and also the other parties. We've been doing this in the past, but I don't think to the same extent as I want to. Otherwise, we wouldn't be showing the picture that we're showing now. Some examples of the other activities in Limpopo. I think this one we highlighted because here, without IDC intervention, those 1,000 shops would have been really at risk. So we're modernizing Palaburwa Copper, ensuring that it's also environmental friendly, the smelter, but it also then is what we've been talking about beneficiating, because here we're beneficiating copper. So that's one of the examples in Palaburwa. And then with the other is taking advantage of VW, really localizing, so we funded. This is one of a number of others. I mean, there's a number of other players we have, so we just picked up one, which we're doing here. On the next one, as part of our efforts to continue to play a role in the energy side, we supported an entity on the coal mining. He's a black entrepreneur. But also, and then in Brett's Northwest, we also have supported a company that manufactures those bags for, amongst others, onions, tomatoes, and all of you, and potatoes, so that then it helps support the transport of the agricultural products. Job creation is one of our key outcomes, so that's one area where we want to ensure that we increase. And we also worried about the trend that we've seen. As 2012 is in a way an outlier. As I said, there was one large transaction that we had, which sort of distorts that. But there's a concerted effort for us. In fact, the shareholder has really put a stretch on us that we need to really increase that level of activity. So we're having conversations with him. So we're working tirelessly to ensure that we increase it, because it's the level of unemployment that is a problem. It's one of the numbers I said we need to correct. When we presented this, it was 26.6 at the level of unemployment. Now we know stats that say you should have a number which is 27.1, which is going actually the wrong way, where we don't want it to go. So that means our work is cut out, really. So what we've done on slide 46 was really just to give a breakdown of where these jobs are. If you look over the last 5 years, it's about 123,000, but that's not enough, really. I think this economy needs even much more jobs than we're providing. Although we're making some successes where we're seeing more jobs being created in other provinces, but I don't think it's a record that we think we are proud of. So we've put in some example of, Exxaro is one of the large suppliers of coal to Eskom, so it's one of the key ones. So as they look at exploring in new areas in Limpopo, we supported them, and as a result of that, we're expecting about 3,000 jobs to be created in a company that's largely controlled by blacks. That's exactly. Now, the last part, really, on our development outcome, Chair, is on the transformation side. So we look at black businesses that are owned, or where there's black ownership, and also the way there's black industrialists. So that we track in, Chair, and I must say I'm encouraged that we see more and more that we're supporting more of those that are black owned rather than just being black empowered. And the area which we've made some significant, some inroads, we've just started tracking it, that's the black industrialists. That we do as IDC, but also we also do it with the DGI as we partner with them. So that's one area. As I indicated right at the beginning, the other areas that we look at is youth and women, and those are the ones that we now in earnest are starting to track to ensure that we do make some inroads. We also have on slide 51 how we've done it, funded women per province, companies that have at least 25% of women per province. And then on slide 52, we have an example of one such project where it's women owned. It's pet food. It's here in the Western Cape, where we've seen really how passion can really make people to be entrepreneurs, which we're very encouraged, where pet food was being imported, where else we can do it locally. Yeah. And then for youth as well, we've looked at it in terms of the provinces. As I said, we're starting to track that. And then we've given just but one example of that in the youth-owned company on the powdered coating. One other thing which people are not that consciously aware of whenever they think of IDC, they only think of big business. But in terms of numbers, in terms of the definition of small and medium times, 55% in numbers of our approvals actually has been to SMEs. So we do indeed fund SMEs in terms of numbers. So that table just shows you the state over the last 5 years. And we've shown some examples. Some of these examples, for an example, this one is SME, but it's also women-owned. So we'd have that as that. And then if you look at sex packaging, it's SME, but it's also youth-owned as well. So we've got some of those, which is a combination and a combination. So then the others, Chair, is in fact, other than just investing, we have a unit which we call it development investment support. So in this instance, what stands out on this one is where we participated and we assisted people with disabilities in actually ensuring that there's a business that has been supported. But also we do invest in the what we call where we're looking at impact. So that will not be on the ordinary normal side of IDC investing, where we look at social entrepreneurs, where we invest in special economic zones and the number of all those initiatives to really try and unpack. So we do do that. That's the next slide where we say invest for impact. And then the last slide on the South African activities really, that we do participate as a responsible citizen also on the CSI initiatives. One area which we've embraced really is on education. We know its ability and what it can do. And last year we did build a school in the Eastern Cape, but these are some of the initiatives that we, the school in the Eastern Cape in Kolkwane. So, but these are some of the activities that we have. We've adopted over 30 schools, 20 high schools and 10 feeder primary schools. Our mandate does allow us, I'm coming to an end now, Chair. Our mandate does allow us to invest into the rest of the African continent. So our footprint is on 23 countries. Last year, we've only approved about 255 million, which is a bit down. But if you look in terms of the total portfolio, we are still well represented. It's about 12% of our total book. But we've disbursed last year over 1.3. But what we found is the time it has taken us to disperse is a bit longish compared to our own liking. But we've continued to invest. So this map gives you a sense of some of the activities that we have in the continent. We picked up one example really just to show where we've invested in Zambia, also on the processing side, on the copper processing side. So that gives the sense that here when we talk about value add this is what we would also want to encourage, so that as a continent, we don't only just export, but we do process, and we need to continue to increase that. We know infrastructure and energy is one of the key reasons of the low levels of processing, and this is one area which we also focusing on in funding as IDC. I did indicate that we had an intervention where we put in on the drought, so we provided 250 to the land bank to assist in the drought, because we want things to be able to process, that's one, but also some of those companies that we invest in would need to have access to water, so which is why we participated. So we gave them a line of credit, and they're busy with that. La Rochelle did mention that one of the reasons why our performance has been very modest compared to the other years is because of the subsidiaries that we have, the two large ones being Fosco and SCO. And as a result of that, we have really put in more focused effort, and with our board and also the shareholder, to say we need to really help turn those companies around. As far as SCO, in Fosco, we have recapitalized, modernized, but we still, Fosco is not out of the woods yet, so we're still doing a little bit more work. On SCO, the process of introducing the strategic equity partners in the different parts of the business is well advanced, and it's going through the normal processes. Hopefully, this time next year, it will be the norm. In fact, I think by April, May next year, that process would have been completed, because we've gone through the open and transparent process. So, Chair, sorry I didn't take 15 minutes. I think I took more than that. But really the message is we are operating in tough times, but as a development finance institution, we are committed to really play our role. We have chosen the Project Evolve, which is a new strategy. We would like to believe it's pointing us into the right path. That means as IDC, we have to continue to be proactive. We cannot be reactive. Our investments have to ensure that they do promote job-rich reindustrialization, and in that process, at the same time, we also transform. So we are saying we do have the balance sheet, difficult as it is, but I think it's still strong enough to can be able to ensure that we are able to deliver in terms of our mandate. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you very much, CEO. You've done well. The Honorable High was literally at stake when he spoke to you earlier on. He asked that we render his apology. You could see his arm, and he's just recovered from another test that he's undergone. So to the members as well, the apology from Honorable High that he had to leave us in an unplanned manner. Let's allow the members to engage with the presentation. It's a heavy one, it's a hefty one, it's a very important one. So I would want to request members that you confine your questions maybe to three. You can then have three questions. Yeah, if you bring in any comments, it will be counted as part of the three. I notice Honorable Mtimunya, who's from Mpumalanga, Honorable Faber, who's from the Northern Cape, and then next to him is Honorable Vauda, who is also from Mpumalanga. Let's have the three of them, and we'll take at least two other rounds after them. We'll ask you to jot the questions and respond after all three raised their questions and comments.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. First, I think we should welcome the presentation and be mindful of the fact that we've been very strict in terms of time. You would have expanded on a number of issues. It is on that basis that I want to submit, Chair, through you that maybe we should be privy to your annual report, detailed annual report, so that we can be able to really go into the detail on for your operations and your performance for for the year ended March 2016, and probably, most probably, to get a sight of your annual performance plan for the year ensuing April 2017, so that we can be able to read the two with proper understanding and broad information base. The Kaodang energy plant that we have flighted there, did you say is in the Northern Cape? It's in Pretoria, okay. Okay. You have reflected in your presentation that you are making inroads also in provinces that you have made less of an investment and less of a touching base there. I would really like, given my initial statement, that as such does not become an incidental kind of a thing. It becomes really fundamental as part of your of your program or your long term strategic plan as an organization. So that we really need to see how aggressive is your strategy in terms of turning around the corner and begin to shift from being urban buyers and become more rural, because that's where poverty and joblessness is hitting us the hardest. And I really need to see that, and I think the document I've just reflected on or requested would assist us. Did I hear you saying that you got rated by the rating agency as an individual, as an entity? If you can broaden your response on that, if you were rated as an individual company or entity, why is that so? What is the value of your, what is your book value as a company, and how much of it comes from public purse as ITC? You make mention of the results, especially from FASCOR and SCORE, that has recorded a 1 billion plus loss the year under review. What do you attribute that to? I heard you making a reflection that it is in your plan to turn around the corner, but what do you attribute to the loss of the 1 billion that you recorded at the end of the year under review? The issue of changing the structure of the economy, I know you did touch on it in terms of your strategy, but again, emphasis is that cannot be incidental. It must be fundamental as part of your mandate. I would like you to really expand on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The three questions was your rating as an entity, the book value and the sources, the results and the attributes to the results. The last one, you sneaked in the fourth one very hurriedly. I couldn't catch the fourth one, but I think you have it. Okay, let's have Honorable Faber then, please.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get clarity on that. You said that you don't, the amount that you don't get back is between 17 and 20%. Of the money that you lend. You don't get back 20%, but it's down to 70%. Now, if I look at it, we are talking on, if I'm correct, on 14.5 billion. Then if you work that out, it should say that you are actually losing 300 million. A year, and I need to know if that is correct, because if that is correct, I want to know if you have any type of plan in place to retrieve this money in any way, and if or you don't have better evaluation systems on projects before investing money and throwing it into the water. Because if I look at 17 to 20%, and we're talking on plus minus 300 million rand that goes to waste a year, we could have built and created so many jobs with money like that. So this to me is surely a great cause of concern. And I think we have to look into that. It's easy to say we have to create jobs. And we look at some figures that's there. It's creating big businesses for big amounts of projects like the sun panels in the Northern Cape for just starting it off, but after that, job creation actually stops. Now if we are losing 300 million a year, I cannot say that is good. And I can't live by this. You have to give me some explanation on that. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Bowder.
Thank you, Chairperson. Please allow me to greet you all with Assalamu Alaikum. I trust you're not going to count that as one of my questions, Chair. Chairperson, I'll
you want me to behave like Trump?
Thank you, Chair. You know, this issue of the small businesses, I noticed that there's investment in, and we welcome that very much, because that is where we will see the real empowerment of our people when we go into the grassroots. And I've noticed that there's been a decrease in the last few years from 2012 moving onwards. Also, there seems to be a decrease with job creation during that period. Also with the investments that are going into this. So there's obviously a relationship there. And I'm just wondering whether we shouldn't look at, or the IDC should not be looking at improving that particular aspect. Because if we can improve there, I think we will see the spin-offs in where we really want to see spin-offs. I'm going to be very brief, Chair. The second issue is obviously, you know, this renewable energy It's great, it's fine, we all know that it's you know, energy is a big thing, but I think we are moving towards solving our energy problems. I'm just concerned that renewable energy does not really create many jobs. Wherever we go, we find that there's a lot of investment put into it, but doesn't. The other thing about renewable energy that is a cause for concern is very often it's you know, placed in remote areas and it uses up a lot of water. So I think when looking into these investments, we must look at what impact this is. I'm talking personally from our own town where, you know, a 10-megawatt power station is going to be taking up, like, you know, 3/4 of the town's water supply. And that you know, and to create 10 or 12 jobs, that's hardly, you know, worthwhile at the end of the day. We may as well just collect 10 megawatts from these power stations that are giving us, what, 2,000 and 3,000 megawatts. Finally, a follow-up also, I think some of the members have already mentioned, I think the most important thing at the end of the day is how much of money is being invested and how many jobs are being created. That is what we want to see. What kind of jobs are we getting out of the money that we are investing? Thank you, Chair. I think there's less than 3 questions and maybe some points. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honourable Wouda. Allow me to take the 2 spaces left by Honourable Father to raise 2 questions. The one is related to the legislative frameworks that you have. Are you able to indicate to us whether there is any need to tighten up on some of the legislation, or do you feel that presently you are able to maximize your operations without legislative changes? The second point that I want to raise is about the money that has been spent. On one slide you show us huge proportion of investment in the Northern Cape, but then in another slide when you show us impact and job creation in the Northern Cape, it is very small. Now, is that a cyclical occurrence, or can you help us to understand why that is happening in the Northern Cape? Because it relates with the question that was initially raised by the Honourable Timunia, that I just want to then emphasize that we are deployed here by our provincial legislatures. And therefore, we are looking at provincial interest. But let me then add another question to that. Can you indicate to us whether you are getting satisfactory cooperation from the provincial legislatures in enhancing the vision of the IDC? Let's allow you to lead your team
on your responses, please, CEO.
Thanks. Thank you to the members for the questions. Chair, let me say, in fact, these questions do provide evidence that we need to engage with this committee more. And I think if we do that, maybe then some of the questions the committee will be a bit more comfortable. And I think, with your permission, I would ask that we try and do that, Chair. So we'll be more than willing and able really to come and engage. Because in fact, as the committee has been newly constituted, this is actually our first time as IDC, to my understanding. So I mean, we do have, with the portfolio committee, we've engaged regularly, and I think that helps, so we can do that. Now, Chair, coming to the specific questions, on the annual report, Chair, I just checked with the EDD Parliamentarian Liaison Officer. There are still copies of the annual report at the paper store, so I think members, because we do table that, so we've tabled that, so because it is a bit detailed. We can also provide, I think what we'll do is through the Capitan office, we will provide the electronic version so that it's easier. We've tried to make it not as bulky so that it goes to the point, but it gives the more story. And I agree with Honorable Mtimunye, that will give you a detailed level of activity of what we do, because not only is it talking to the activities for the year, but it gives you a sense of the portfolio as well, which is not very evident in our presentation that we have here. What we will do, because we do also now coming to the annual performance plan, so that will be tabled. So what happens is the process is we take it to the board, and then after the board, then we take it to the shareholder. We sign that compact every year. So I think we will share that. I think it gets tabled even here. So I think the office of EDD will make available the last one, and then because we do it every year, because we have to, in terms of PFMA, we have to do it before the end of March in event. So it's important that we do that. So that will also be shared, because in there's also issues of KPIs, what is it that we have planned for the next 5 years, because it's a rolling 5 years, so that the members can also have comfort to say, are we falling short, which year, because we promised certain things. The investment in the less developed provinces, it's not an accident. I think, Mr. Honorable Tim, you're right. It's not an accident. It had to be a deliberate attempt. You know, I was thinking when we come to the NCOP, to this select committee, because we've got members representing different provinces, one has to be very careful how I word this to say I will do less in the province where Mr. Makwe comes from than I would on the others without upsetting him. So, but there needs to be a deliberate attempt to try and balance this. And so how we do that, which in fact this is one of the reasons why we decided to change the strategy and be more proactive, because you can do that if you're proactive to say, here are the projects, let's go to these particular provinces, let's set them up there because we know there's a need, but taking into account what the province has in terms of investment. So there's a deliberate attempt. So there are instances where entrepreneurs will come directly to us because they're in Gauteng or they're in KZN or whatever. So in those instances, if we can't convince them otherwise, then we do have those investments there. This will link me to the question that the Chair has asked, that any cooperation with the provinces. We do have cooperation with the provinces. In fact, we engage with the provinces. We have offices in every province. So those provincial offices do engage. The provinces do have different awareness campaigns and all of that. We party to that, and then our regional offices also familiarize themselves with the provincial development plans, and then we can see how we can take part in. And at the back of those, because what we found is in some of those, there are some projects or initiatives that are provincially driven, and then we try and play a role in front of them. So that relationship has been very good, Chair. But I think the observation is right. It has to be deliberate, and we are trying our hardest. We're not there yet because you can still see it's skewed. I mean, our activities is skewed towards Gauteng, KZN, some parts of KZN, and the Western Cape. So there's a deliberate attempt. You'll find a province like Northern Cape that will also talk to the question you asked, Chair, has benefited more relative to the others. Because that went through a process when we're talking about the renewable. I'll come back to Mr. Honorable Vadlo's question on renewable. So in those instances, you would have seen Northern Cape disproportionately got more. I mean, because what we do also, we have a unit which we call research and information. That does the research, that looks at the contribution of each province, GDP province, the population and all of it, into the whole of South Africa. And in the last years, the Northern Cape has been. And the large two large drivers, it's been renewable, because there's been lots of those renewables, particularly taking advantage of what the province has, which is the sun. But also there has been a couple of large mining investments that we've had. So that has helped. That's why you've seen a large investment in the Northern Cape. But then the jobs talks to what the Honorable Vadwa mentioned, so that if you look on the investments for the renewable vis-a-vis the jobs they create, directly, that is, that's low. But what we should not lose sight of is that that energy then unlocks a number of other things. So if we look at it just narrowly, it looks like it's not an investment worth making. But we have to look at it long term to say, with the energy that we're generating, then we can have other factories, the SMEs and all of that, at the back of this energy. So that's how we look at it holistically. So, but that also then, your observation, Chair, to say, but we've invested a lot of money, but there's very little jobs in another game. It's because a number of that investment has gone into renewable. That's why there's that disproportionate, if you compare those. We still have to do SMEs. It's important that we do SMEs. I think because SMEs in their nature create jobs much faster than the others, and we know that, which is why I've seen 55% of our investments over the last 5 years has been on SMEs. That's one area which we will continue to do, so that then the jobs. We are also very concerned on the trend on the employment, which has been declining. In fact, the shareholder has been very candid about that area, and we're working very hard to try and reverse that, particularly when you look at the unemployment level at 27.1. So it's really on top of our minds to really, that's why we talk about what we call job-rich industrialization. I will get Rochelle to talk about what is the value of the IDC, but as she prepares herself, let me talk about the rating agency. IDC has been rated for a long time by both Moody's and Fitch. I'm not even sure how many. When was the first time we rated, Rochelle? I can't even remember now. We can check. But we've been rated for a while. This has allowed us as an entity, I mean, so same as what Eskom would do, same as what Development Bank of South Africa would do, is when you go out into the markets, particularly international markets, and you go out and you borrow, some, not all, but some of those lenders that you approach would want to get a comfort from the rating agency. They see a rating agency as an independent person who's not putting any money, but will give you an independent and an honest view. So it's against that when we started getting into the international market. In fact, we've been in the international market, and some of the lenders that we have been saying we would like it to be rated, which is why we started. I think it's over 10 years or so. You can check exactly. So we've been rated by Fitch for the domestic issuance, and then by Moody's for the international. So that we've been tracking, which is why we're having these conversations with them. Because the funding of the IDC, maybe we should have put in a slide here, because I think there was a question to say, are we relying on the fiscus? IDC is owned 100% by government, reports on the Department of Trade and Industry, of Economic Development, sorry. It was started under the Department of Trade and Industry. Now it reports under the Department of Economic Development over the last 6 years or so. IDC last got funding for its activities from the fiscus in the mid-1950s. So how it's been doing is from the investments that it has, it reinvests, it goes out, and it borrows, which is why it is important that it continues to be rated. So that combination, the borrowing, getting repayments from the loans, putting them back into the economy, that's how it's really been running the business, and the intention is to continue to do that so that we don't put too much strain on the fiscal, so we don't get any money to run. There are some funds which are earmarked and specific, which we run on behalf of government. Those largely come from the Department of Trade and Industry. For an example, I mentioned in trying to promote the textile industry, we have what we call CTCP competitiveness textiles and clothing program, but also there's an MSEP, manufacturing enhancement program, where there's CTI money, it's ring-fenced, it's not for our activities, so we help. So we fund the entrepreneurs, but we also supplement with our own. So we don't get any funding from the fiscal. So we know. So that it's important that then we run this business as prudent and as whilst making sure that there's enough impact as far as possible. So maybe Rachel, why don't you talk about our value and how we calculate that, and then I'll come back and finish a couple of others.
Thank you, Chief. The IDC's value, if somebody has to ask me simply what is the value of the IDC, I would say 85 billion rand. None of that money, that's the value if we had to sell the company. We have 120 billion rand in assets. As I said previously, we have listed assets on the JSE, like our Fairfalls and Kumba. We have unlisted investments. Those are the smaller... some of them are big, but it's where we've invested in equities. We've taken stakes in these companies. Then we have about 25 billion rands where we have given out loans to companies. Then we have to deduct our borrowings, what we have borrowed from outside. So that's the money that we owe to the banks to fund ourselves. As the CEO said, we have not received any money from the fiscus in a very long time. We are a tax-paying entity. We pay taxes on twice a year like any other company. We pay dividends over to EDD and the National Treasury on an annual basis based on our income, based on our profit lines. We do have a dividend policy. Yes, simply speaking, that is the worth of the IDC, the balance sheet, and none of it really belongs to anybody else but the shareholder, and we are 100% owned by government.
Thanks, Rochelle. So what we would do, Chair, on an annual basis, we'd also, because we have listed and unlisted assets, so we'd value them on an annual basis. So at the end of the financial year, in fact, we do it every quarter, but then for publishing at the end of the financial year, you'll see that we look at, we'll do what is referred to, accountants call it mark to market, to see what's the value of the assets, and then that will translate into what we are worth. So when you look at the activities of IDC, you look at the income that it gets, but also the growth of its book over time. So there was a question on Fosco, what are the causes of the losses? It's really on two fronts, really. It's largely the phosphoric acid price, because Fosco takes the rock from Parabola, rails it all the way to Richards Bay, processes it, out of that comes phosphoric acid, which is used in the production of fertilizers, and the bulk of it gets exported. So it's a commodity, so the biggest contributor would be that phosphoric acid price. As we speak, I mean, when I look 6 months ago, it was $200 more than what it is now. So it's really putting pressure on Fosco, because Fosco competes with the others, and structurally, as I said, the mine is in Palabura, the plant is in Richards Bay. That structurally has been a challenge. I mean, but IDC started Fosco in 1958 or something. And then eventually bought the plant in Richards Bay. So structurally, that's one type. But also the level of the exchange rate, so it depends which way it goes. I mean, sometimes if it's too strong, then it just makes that combination of a low price and that. So that combination does it. So we've looked at modernizing the plant, because the plant in Richards Bay is relatively old, so there's been a lot of effort to modernize and fix it. That's one of the other contributions. So that, by and large, is done. But the more pressure now is on the phosphoric acid. You would have noticed there's one slide which Rochelle showed when he was showing the value of the investments. She showed Kumba and she showed Sasol. So those are the commodities. If you look at the value of Sasol, how Sasol has shrunk. If you look at the value of Kumba, how the iron ore, because Kumba is largely iron ore, how that has shrunk. So now if you look at the Fosco, they've got a commodity, but it's called soft commodity. So that's the biggest driver, really, on that. But having said that, there's a concerted effort to really try and ensure that the company turns around, because it's very key in Phalaborwa. I mean, without Fourscore and the Phalaborwa Corp, the whole Phalaborwa town would really not exist as we know it, as we know it now. Then the issue of the impairments, I think Honorable Faber asked the impairments, so let's explain that. So the impairments gives us an indication of how doubtful those investments that we have. It does not mean we lose all the money, but the chances of losing all that money being recovered is doubtful. So now every financial entity has to have a threshold. So banks ordinarily would be very worried if it's 3%, very, very worried, because banks have no risk tolerance to the level that we have. So we invest a lot on the startups, we invest a lot on the expansions. So for an example, the renewable plants that we have in Northern Cape, if IDC was not present on the startup side, we'd see very few of them, because the banks were saying, oh, this technology is new, it's never been done in South Africa, we're very worried about it. So as we invest in some of the startups, then the accountants will have to say, we're not sure whether these things will work or not, so let's provide for them. Or we used to call it provision, now they call it impairment. So that's what it is. But in some of them, there will be just projects which we thought would work, which are not just working. So they are just purely not working. So it's a combination of any startup and the ones that have failed or are failing. But also since 2008, what we've done, we've invested in what we call turnarounds. When other countries were having bailout money, South Africa said our economy is not big enough to can have set aside money for bailouts, but we engaged ourselves as IDC, economic development, and then labor to say, let's come up with an intervention. And following from that, we've been investing in some companies which are under strain, and because of that uncertainty, so that also then we needed to support them. So that's why development finance institutions like the IDC have to play what is called a counter-cyclical role. So when it's tough and everybody's running away, we have to try in and come in and try and save the jobs. That's why we measure jobs saved and jobs created. So that combination gives us our risk tolerance then to be much higher than the banks, which is why. But having said that, putting that 20% benchmark, because you're right, Honorable Faber, if we're to put it there, it's just like we're losing money. If we don't put in processes and making sure that our due diligence is right and all that, so we have that threshold because we're saying if we get to above 20%, then the sustainability of the entity itself is even more jeopardy. So we are mindful to that. We have that as a stretch, but we're stretching ourselves to target it to go at least to 15%. In the space we are going to have entities that are doubtful. The trick is to make sure the process is right, the due diligence is right, but to give them a chance. If we don't give the new, I showed there's a unit which we have, as we call new industries. In that one, we bring in technology which has not been tested. Some of it will work, some of it will not work. The thing is, you have to strike a balance so that you have more winners than losers. So it's all of that which we're building in our risk processes. I didn't bring our chief risk officer today, but we do have a chief risk office unit who is preoccupied to ensuring that we try and balance that. We're not comfortable at 17%. We want to go as low as 15%. And we, in fact, this is one of the top of mind by the shareholder and the board, to say we want it to be counter-cyclical, but at the same time, it must keep your impairments as low as you can. So the concern is also shared in the IDC. It's not only sharing the concern, but we're doing something about that. Chair, there was a question on the structure of the economy and what are we going to do. So the approach we took, which is why I wanted to be in the center, is to also influence that. I spoke about the investments, but there's also a role that we play where if there are policies, we engage, we give input ourselves from IDC's perspective in terms of what we think of those, particularly the ones that have a direct bearing on the economy. So we do that. And that's the value add that we do. Also from the unit which we have called the research and information, from the research that they do, we also provide it so that the policymakers have some information as they do that. So we're also, in fact, for us, for the economy has to be sustainable for us to really ensure that we our activities do succeed.
He said, is there anything on the framework, legislative framework? Not really, Chair. I mean, one thing that we're looking at is really, Rochelle said, we are a tax-paying entity. But we're engaging with the shoulder to find ways in which we can release more of that money to go back into the investments rather than to pay tax. If anything, we're engaging with that. But the shoulder is seized with that. For now, I think the legislation, the IDC Act of 1940, is fine. It's been amended, so and the support we're getting from the shareholder has been good. It will happen from time to time when other legislations that impact the investments that we have, we will feel the impact. For an example, if you look on the energy, if you look on water, because of that. So we impacted like anybody, but we do provide input into those policies as they are. Thank you very much. I think we've tried to answer all.
Thank you. I think you've covered them all. Let's just test if there is a last round of questions. We'll have Honourable Tebe. Are you okay, Honourable Mahmoud?
Yeah, I'm covered.
Then I'll add after the Honourable Tebe just one question as well. Honourable Tebe is from the Northwest.
I saw a slide the CEO talking about, I'm not sure if I got it correctly, but you have spent 27% of the allocated budget for Black industrialist. Is it what I understood? If so, why so? I think to a larger extent you've tried to capture the geographical spread of the industrial program proportionately to also the women and the youth. But this is what we impress upon all the departments from your DTI, and I can tell you now with my eyes closed that your MSEP and your CTPCT, all the allocations are favoring the already developed provinces. We know that. There has not been a change. We speak about it every day. Every department comes every year. Every DFI comes every year. And they talk about a concerted effort. There's no change. So I agree with you, the CEO, that, look, we want to see change, but I don't see if there's going to be any change. Like, for instance, I can give you an example. Northwest, in terms of the latest employment ratings, they are the hard hit because of the job shedding in the mining industry in particular. There's already plans to set up the SEZ there. And I don't see, and I don't get an impression that you are trying to come in there and try to, because for how long are we going to talk about localization and beneficiation if we are not going to be able to practicalize it? If you look at the PGMs, value chain, how much more of job creation can be there in the platinum belt? We are not even close. We are not even at the inception stage to do with that. If you want to go to the Northern Cape, I can tell you with my eyes closed again that the green energy sector has been grossly overpopulated by FDI as opposed to our own people. We were there, we saw a different story from what has been presented to us. Even the skills transfer to the local communities was non-existent. We were there. There's nothing like that. And this is one thing that we want to see. If you talk about your inability to find, to exert progress in provinces like your Free State, for instance, where agriculture in the main, It's part of the, and we want to appreciate, but if you look at breadth, we want to appreciate that there's one project that you are funding there. But the latter part of breadth used to be the industrial park. You should be knowing where you had all your manufacturing line up. That area has collapsed today. And these are the things that we talk about that we would want to see our DFIs coming into space and assisting us, so that we can see progress. But up to so far, we are not seeing that progress. I think
I don't know. I think we are dealing with, yes, of course, we are dealing with the cyclical and structural challenges, but there should be some sort of intervention from the DFIs insofar as job creation. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. The Honourable Ntebe, that's why I earlier wanted to know whether the relationship with the provinces is a good one, because I think we also need to be fair to the IDC that some of these things are prescribed by forces beyond the control of the IDC, like the market forces and also the priorities of the provinces. And we need to look at how do we actually begin to engage progressively, as you're doing now, from a perspective of business unusual. Now, the reason why I raised that was not because I wanted to comment on what you say, but because it's related to my question that Dr. Kituyi, who is the General Secretary of UNDAC, at the Africa Trade Week that's happening in Addis in Ethiopia, commended South Africa for its trade policy reforms, which was at one time considered to be detrimental or risky. And we are always hearing the concern that we are not clear enough in our policies. Our policy positions are unclear, and that affects the South African economy. Now, I'm sitting and saying, if Dr. Kituyi is making a statement like that, how informed is that? And wanted to test it maybe with you, CEO, in the IDC to say that, are our policy gaps really so detrimental to our economic growth? And what is it that we as legislators can do to address that particular hurdle in our economic growth? That would be the question.
Thanks, Chair. So I'll give you my let me start. I'll start with your question, Chair. I'll give you my take on this. Having been privileged to being at the IDC for as long as I've been, and seeing the South African economy at work, I think our policies are good. There's always room for improvement, but I think they are good, Chair. For me, the issue is the implementation. Everywhere I've gone, that's been one thing. We talk about business unusual. We talk about everybody having their hands on deck. We have all of these different things, but we don't implement. And we need to implement. Sometimes there's a risk we'll implement, we'll get it wrong, but let's implement. For me, if there's any criticism, I would say to all of us, the South Africans, we don't implement. There's lots of good things we do, and that's why then it becomes evident when we start looking at the different localities where people say 22, 23 years, I'm not seeing the change. It's not because there's something wrong with the policy. It's because those that are tasked with the implementation are not doing that. It goes all the way, just from the locality, all the way to the top. If I'm being candid, Chair, that's it. That's why I think we're getting even this recognition on our policies. I look at the, with all the imperfections that DTI has, it's got good incentives that do make a difference. and it's trying hard, but on the other side, we find some localities just don't embrace it, and that makes it tricky for those intenders. I mentioned the textile industry. That's a difficult industry. That's very, very difficult. It has to compete. It started competing on cheap labor. It went on to compete on bulk production. But we know, as South Africans, that's where most of the women in particular, particularly those that are breadwinners, are employed in that. And this is one sector we couldn't just leave, and the DTI played an important role in that. And we've seen that turnaround, but it needed a lot of effort, but also on the private sector as well, where it was easy for private sector, the retailers, just to import as opposed to procure locally. But that collaboration, that engagement, we've seen some change. But as I say, I think all of us, this is one South Africa we have, and I think all of us have to implement. And I think if we do that imperfect, the solutions might be, I think we can make even more ground than we're making now. So that's my vision from the almost 20 years I've been at IDC that has given me. Maybe let me come to the specific questions from Mr. Ntebe. The 27% on the black industrial assistance, it gives us an indication of where we are, not necessarily the part of the budget, but it's as a percentage of what is approved for the year. So that's what it is. So if you look at what is approved for the year, so that gives us an indication of that. It's still a relatively, it's still a relatively new one for us. That's why we're starting to track it. And I'm encouraged. You know, we had a youth conference. When did we have it? In early October. And I was encouraged to see so many youth entrepreneurs with such brilliant ideas. And it sort of put us as IDC to challenge, to say we have to think differently in terms of those youth. So this black industry, I think the effort to say, let's not, at least as DFIs, there's nothing wrong if people want to be investors, you can have shares there and whatever. But for DFIs, to support those industrialists, and I think we are on the right path. It's still early days, but we want blacks to get involved, understand the business. It will work, it might not work. At least if it does not work, let the black entrepreneur at least know about the business, know what it has been. We've funded, there's been lots of others where people sit in, sent in, have a factory in, I don't know, bread, not knowing anything about it. So we changed. In fact, we changed about 5 years ago already. So we called it expansionary BE, but now we're talking black industries. And I think the support DTI has brought is actually helping, because there's a grant element for the cost of funding. Is that? And also, I think if we also look at the support EDD brought, when there was some of the money from the fines to say, bring it in, let's put it in the economy, that has helped. So with the black industry, I'm encouraged. Now we're showing these fewer numbers, but I think in times to come, you'll see that there will be some change. Because this, we're looking at, our board is preoccupied and our chair. It's not only that I'm talking about it, but it's something that we encourage. We've put in our funding, we explained how we are funded, but we said deliberately we are going to cross-subsidize. So for the black industrialist, when he approaches the IDC, so we look at the pricing of that deal to say what the pricing is, and then because we'll be supporting a black industrialist, we'll take 1.5% from that pricing. Because we want to really encourage people to fold their sleeves, get involved, understand the business, run the business, get the skills transferred. So that's our effort, which is why I'm encouraged. But we need the industrialists. Not everybody, I'm not an entrepreneur, and not everybody can be an entrepreneur, and we need to accept that. But we need to, as DFIs, encourage those entrepreneurs to be there, and we must ensure that the environment is there. So that's what it is. I think your observations on the province in particular, Northwest, are very, we're not beneficiating to the extent that we should. You mentioned the Platinum Belt. We started a project with the Chamber of Mines on platinum, actually, where we wanted to manufacture fuel cells. There's a pilot in the center of Johannesburg. It's running. So and we've been talking to entrepreneurs, but now I've seen others now want to use hydro, different technologies. So we're talking to them because we also concerned that if we don't add value to our own minerals, then we're losing. I mean, we're seeing that with manganese, we're seeing that with iron ore and all of that. So there's a concerted effort. That's why we have this new industries unit. Also, that's why we start much earlier on in the investment so that we can encourage. We need the technology to ensure that we do that. And one of the reasons why, I mean, when we started, IDC only had an office here in Cape Town, and then after a while it had one in Durban, and then after a while it had one in PE. So, but now we have in all the provinces, because we want to be closer to the action. So, with your permission, Chair, I think if the committee members, through, because you also do your constitution, what is it, your web, constituency work, I nearly said constitutional, because I knew that was wrong. You do constituency work. Please encourage the people to engage with the IDC. There's as I said, there's an office in every province. In fact, it's not only one office. For an example, in Northwest, we have in Mahikeng, we have in Rustenburg, and we have in Plains, for an example. So we have the same in the Eastern Cape, in all of them. So we might have the main office and other satellites. So yeah, we're not perfect, but we really want to work with them. There are areas where we do well, but there are others not really that we're doing so well. So, but I do take the, in fact, on the SEZ, we are working with the SEZ because in the Northwest, because we want to be participate and ensure that we play a role. So in that one, we do. In fact, interestingly, on the renewable, the first renewable to be connected, IDC funded it. But I think your observations are right in that we're not bringing in more of the activities from the local communities. In a way, it talks to the point that Honorable Vadwa, as he comes back again, that he made on the jobs that are created. So what we're doing is we're saying, from those investments, what other industries can they start? We have an entity called Small Enterprise Finance Agency, CIFA, yeah, which does the smaller part. So we're working with them now to say, from these big projects, are there opportunities for the small companies that can come in and then can be able to fund them so that people just don't rely on the dividends that will one day come from these investments, but they can get involved in the activities. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, CEO, and your team. I'm going to stick out my head, but I know that at least two members will support me on this, that in early February next year, we are scheduled to engage in committee oversight. And I will strongly propose to the members that we then look at Mpumalanga for that oversight, and that we ask you, CEO, to prepare yourself. I see two handshakes from the two members that I knew would agree. That you begin to look at the discourse of this select committee. What would be the IDC programs within? We don't want to travel 300 kilometers from one side to another. So once you've told us where most of your projects are centered, then we could look. We have the two honorable members here to also get them, because we're doing it with the provincial legislature as well, to say to us whether that is also something that they would want us to give attention to. But to request you now already, because of the follow-up on this conversation and the emphasis that you have correctly placed on implementation, that when we go there, we do oversight of the IDC also and look at what are the prospects to actually implement and make a difference within one of the provinces that have been traditionally neneglected, being Mpumalanga. We won't do the whole province. You will decide whether we go to Nelspruit, whether we go to White River, and propose that to us. Our secretary will be taking that up further with you. But for now, thank you very much. Can I ask you to bear with us for another 5 minutes, just while we do some business here? Because I have an interest, but I thought maybe the other members have some things as well that they'd want to just touch base with you on, because of this being your first encounter with us. Thank you. No, you could sit here. Thank you very much. We're doing very well in terms of our time, honorable members. We have two things to do. The one, Grace, we don't know, because I have not been scheduled to chair. Do we have an update on our study talk? Can I ask you then to speak to us on that? And then the second thing that we'll do, honorable members, would just be to adopt the minutes of our last meeting. But before that, let's get an update on the study tour as we pay tribute to Commandant Castro.
Thanks, Chairperson. Yesterday I received an email from the embassy in Cuba. They are requesting the committee to utilize the 27th of January to the 4th of February instead of the 13th to the 21st of January. For the study tour.
Have you looked at those dates, Grace? When
that week is the oversight week.
No, we can't. We can't compromise our oversight. What's the motivation?
At the moment, they said it's going to be difficult for them to draw up a program because they are still busy with the funeral of their former president. So they don't have enough time to prepare for us for the 13th to the 21st.
To be honest, honorable members, that's a flimsy excuse for me. Let's hear opinions of the other members.
Can I suggest, Chair, that we defer the discussion, to Manco, probably also to relook at the oversight program of the committee for January, if we can shift it to some other time. I know Parliament starts on the 9th. We only have the State of the Nation Address on the 9th of February. Then that officially Parliament will start in 2017. Perhaps the provisional, we should agree as a committee to that, but mandate the Manco to deal with the details and solicit reasons as to why they can't take the initially proposed dates. If we've got strong reasons on their part not to take that date, perhaps we should motivate them to really stick to our original proposed period of the oversight if on their side there is no strong reasons for them to shift to our proposed dates.
Let me just, for the sake of all the members, honorable Timunia, as a whip, can you tell us when the Manco is scheduled to meet?
My information is that it's meeting on Thursday morning.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, as we are the guests in Cuba, I believe if they give you dates on the 27th of January to the 4th of February, you adhere to that. We are guests in that country. We can't be adamant and say, why can they not look at us at this date? We are guests. And we must, as guests, then also respect that if they have these dates, for whatever other reasons they have. And I really think it is quite rude for us to come, and that is not a good excuse. We cannot say that. If Parliament might have, they might also have other schedules, except for Mr. Castro's death. And I really believe that we should respect that. And we can change our program if we have to, if we can, to fit this. We cannot ask them to change their program. We the guests. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Wouter.
Thank you, Chair.
I think what we should do is send our condolences with regard to the death. Also indicate that the dates that they have proposed, we do have an alternative engagement of that date. If it is possible, could we look at another date? If not, then we will see, as Honourable Faber says, what we can do to accommodate that date. I think that would be the sweetest way to go about it. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As has been proposed, we will look at it in the MENCO meeting. But I need to say that it's important to clarify. It's not the Cubans that are telling us they can't accommodate us. It's the South African embassy. Okay. Now, I'm saying that we'll discuss it in the MENCO meeting. Okay. Also, honourable members, we need to be mindful that if we shift it, I don't know when we're going to shift it to.
What about the date that they proposed?
No, that's our oversight week. We can't, as a committee, overrule the program of the NCLP. But we will, as the MENCO, talk about that and also look at whether that can actually be done respectfully as we approach the Chair of Chairs.
Chairperson, can I then ask for alternative? What about June month?
We'll look at that. I don't know what the weather is like in June. Maybe it's better than what it is in January. Okay. Let's deal with the last matter, honourable members. The minutes of the meeting. Do we only have one set, Grace? Two sets. Okay. The minute of the one set is the meeting that was held on Tuesday the 8th. Tuesday the 1st of November. We had the meeting that was the presentation, we would remember, on the unemployment insurance bill. We have the members present on page 1. Honourable Bauda, you have nothing to say, you were not there. on page 2, on page 3, we have the opening remarks. Can we just check? No, it wasn't you.
Point of order, Chair.
Yes, Honourable Bauda?
I was there for both the meetings, Chair.
Were you there?
Yes.
But the last 5 minutes of the meeting don't count.
Honourable Ntero?
Chair, with such an amendment that Honourable Bauda was playing, can I move the motion of the meeting?
Honourable Wouter was not absent, but he was late. Honourable members, I normally read the minutes before, but now you want us to accept a minute if you look at page 5. In page 5, that international study tour was scheduled for this year. Do you want us to adopt the minutes with the study tour for this year? From the 13th to the 21st of January 2016. And then the minutes that were adopted as well were of the 25th of January 2016.
Your minutes are wrong. Mine is 2017. Those are all.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Good.
What is yours?
No, she's changing it.
No, can we cut? Can we have three unaccorrect versions here without the...
There's no correct version. We must correct it.
No, the correct version should be, please. The correct version should be 13 to 21st January 2017.
Yes.
Yes.
I think that's just a printing mistake.
No, it's not printing. You, the computer prints what you type. No, no, no. And okay, so we correct on page 5, item 5, under paragraph 5, we correct it to January 2017. And then on point 6, page 6, what should that be, Grace? The minutes of the 25th January 2016. Can be November. 25th October. 2016. With the three changes. The presence of Honorable Vauda, the two dates. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of that minute? Honorable Faber, seconded by Honorable Mteto.
Chairperson, if we just, I will propose, if we just first from Grace here on point 6, what that date is, because it, we cannot just say we accept it by changing of the date, because she can change it to September or to June.
No, my honourable father, I said October.
So you, are we happy with October?
It was October, whether we're happy or not.
I'm asking you to say, will we change to October? We cannot say...
I said with the two
okay.
Dates changes.
No,
yeah. Okay, it's October 2016. He was thinking of Ohrabi.
I'm not okay with 2016 as some economist around here.
Okay, can we then... Honourable members, look at the minutes of Tuesday, the 8th of November 2016. On page 1, we have the attendance. We have an apology there from Honourable Mtimunya. We had a presentation on that day from the Department of Economic Development, represented by the Deputy Minister, the Honorable Masuku, who presented their annual performance plan to us. We had the deliberations, then we adopted also the report of our oversight. We adopted on page 7 the minutes of the meeting of the 1st of November, and then we also had a brief input by the Department of Labor in preparation for the final realization of the unemployment insurance bill. Can I get a proposal for the acceptance of that minute? There's no date errors on this one. You get
Mine was a page. I didn't proofread it twice.
I want to see it. I don't believe it. Now, don't you want to propose this one as well?
Seeing it's a healthy minute. We're not very successful in the first round.
Can we get a proposal for the acceptance of the minutes of the 8th of November? Proposed by Honorable Mtebe. Seconded by? Honorable. Thank you. Thank you very much. Honorable members? Yes, please.
Chair, I think I should submit it as a concern of the committee meetings. We seem to be going on with this thing or bad attendance of having a meeting without an agenda. We deal with the minutes and we get deprived of our right to raise issues and matters arising from the minutes because we do not have an agenda as a committee. And that is a cause for concern for me, and I think it must be corrected. Number two, we fail to take issues because of the fact that matters arising from the minutes are not dealt with sufficiently in meetings. I will make it an example. The The Department of International Relations came to us and we requested that we get a report, a special report on the African Renaissance Fund. And we attached a period in terms of which that report should be forwarded to us. Up to this day, that report has not come, and departments are now taking us for granted because they know we won't make a follow-up. And I have a problem with it. And the second example is that one entity of the TTI as well, we requested where the issues with issues of governance, they were the chairperson of the board was also CEO of that entity. And I maintain up to this day, that is a problem. That is a compromise of corporate governance. And we said they must go and correct that and come back to us as to how they corrected it. We did not receive the report since then. And they then issues fall through the cracks, and departments have seen that, and they take that for a ride all the time. Some departments, let me put it that way.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that the issues that you're raising is not a reflection on the secretary of this committee, but it's the secretary of the other committee. Martins, when you look at the notices, make sure that there is an agenda to the notices that you distribute from the secretaries. Grace, make sure that on that agenda we also henceforth include matters arising. Honorable Chief Wood, can I ask you to also call Topeka? Otherwise we have to repeat the same thing in the meeting tomorrow. If you drop him an email, then we're sure that both committees will have that. But we concur with you, minute that as such, that there must be matters arising as an agenda item, and we must follow up on that. That being said, Honorable Wouda, you are free to now leave the meeting. The meeting is adjourned.
Hey, bro.